It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I was in 11th grade and life hit me hard. So my stepdad is a drug dealer, which I knew, but he tried to hide it from me. But I pretty much knew. So I remember being in 11th grade and the principal called him to the office. He said, "Ryan, come to the office. No, we need to talk." So I go to the office, like, I didn't do nothing today to get in trouble. Like, what you called me for? She brings me to the office and she turns on the news and it's my mom. My mom at the time was working for Carter, the bus station here, and the FBI is pulling her off the bus. And I'm like, what's going on? So she said, the principal say, "I think you need to go home." So I drive to my stepdad. He had a office building on Brandon Road. So I go there, and I don't know what's going on yet. So my mom is currently in jail at that time. And I look out the window, and I see my stepdad drive by. He going towards the tunnels. And about 10 seconds later, the whole building is surrounded by FBI agents. My name is Ryan Martin, and this is the Time Rolling Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast today. Boy, do I have a great guest for you today. We're going to take a little departure from the world of fishing, and we're going to go to the world of boxing. And the reason that we're going to go there is for a few reasons, actually. One, it's an absolutely incredible story. Two, absolutely incredible person that has risen to the heights of professional boxing. There are tremendous lessons on mindset, tremendous lessons on attitude, tremendous lessons on work ethic, and just the ability to overcome things that aren't perfect in your life. And that is certainly the way with our guest and what he's been able to do. Ryan Martin is a two-time world champion in boxing. He has had an incredible amateur career and fell short of the Olympics and then won two world titles. And he, you know, that sounds like, wow, man, what an incredible career. But there were also lots of things that weren't perfect in his life. In fact, he came from a real tough upbringing and real tough childhood for all kinds of reasons that you're going to hear. So whether you're a boxing fan or not, whether you're somebody that likes stories like this or not, this one is absolutely incredible. And the lessons can be applied to so many different things. So if you want to be a fishing guide, you want to be a great fishing guide, you want to win fishing tournaments, you want to do something else in your life, you want to follow your passion, man, Ryan has a story. He's got a story that you should listen to, and it is absolutely incredible. So I really hope that you enjoy it. I really hope that you stick around through the whole story, because there are so many great, just incredible golden nuggets of information in this podcast with Ryan Martin, two-time world champion boxer. All right, here we go. Ryan, what's up, man?
Nothing much. Hard workout. ready to dive into it. Ready to get to it.
Right on. Well, I usually when I do a podcast like this, I have a lot of time to do a lot of research on somebody. So in this situation, our friend Ted Alling put us together.
Yes.
And I haven't had that much time. So this is going to be a good opportunity. We had an opportunity to get to know each other a little bit this morning. Been working out since 5 a.m.
Yes.
It's about 9 now. And I appreciate you coming. That was a good workout. I'm pretty sure that your heart rate didn't get over 130 beats per second.
Actually, it was a good workout. I loved it. I love getting up early in the morning and getting after it, and hopefully I can come back more and
come back anytime.
Share the workout with you.
Yeah,
more. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you can come back anytime. I'm gonna have to figure out. Our heart rate was at like 185, and I'm pretty sure that yours was about 115.
About 160.
Right.
You know.
So, to bring people up to speed, the reason why his heart rate didn't get over 115 beats per minute is because you are a two-time world champion boxer.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I'm, my whole life has been dedicated to the sport. And, you know, it's just what I love to do. And I work extremely hard. So
there's no way you become a world champion without working extremely hard.
Exactly.
And there's no way you repeat without doing that.
Exactly. You have to put your all into it. And like, just like anything in life, you have to put your all into it. You can't half-ass anything. So
tell me your story, man. Let's catch up a little bit.
So, all right. So, you know, my story is pretty long, but I'm
we got a lot of time.
So, I started boxing when I was 8 years old. My older brother did it before, and he was babysitting me one day, and I was living in Highland Park area. And, he went to this boxing gym. He took me, and, you know, the first day I went there, I started sparring, and I busted this kid's nose, and boxing, I felt like, just grabbed me. I didn't feel like I chose the sport. I feel like it just took me. And I happened to be so good at it. And I think what really grabbed me was the independency that it brung, the core values that it brought to me and introduced me to things as a young kid. And
like what? What were those core values?
The disciplines of you know, working out, being on time, being on schedule, and just relying on yourself. Like, you got to get this done no matter what.
Now, a lot of that comes from a coach. Did you have a good coach?
I had a good coach, great coach. His name was Andy Smith. He's in Chattanooga. And, but as I was growing up, I started traveling around the country, winning these tournaments, and I was number one in the country from the age of 8 years old to 15 years old. I was winning everything. And, you know, I grew up pretty happy. My mom moved here from Ohio. She met a man and, they got married and I moved down here from Akron, Ohio to Chattanooga. And, my stepdad's name is Kevin Albert and he treated me better than his own son. He treated me better than my own dad. He taught me, you know, how to drive a car. He got me Christmas presents. He was just so proud of me that I was, you know, doing well in school and in boxing. So winning these tournaments, growing up, you know, I was going to all these national tournaments, winning here, winning there, number one in the country. And so the age of 16 come around and the Olympic year come up to 2012 Olympics. So that's my only goal in life at this point was to make the 2012 Olympic team. And I was in 11th grade. And life hit me hard. So my stepdad is a drug dealer, which I knew, but he tried to hide it from me. But I pretty much knew. So I remember being in 11th grade and the principal called him to the office. He said, "Ryan, come to the office. No, we need to talk." So I come to the office like, I didn't do nothing today to get in trouble. Like, what you called me for? She brings me to the office and she turns on the news. And it's my mom. My mom at the time was working for Carter, the bus station here, and the FBI is pulling her off the bus. And I'm like, what's going on? So she said, the principal say, "I think you need to go home." So I drive to my stepdad. He had a office building on Brandon Road. So I go there and I don't know what's going on yet. So my mom is currently in jail at that time. And I look out the window and I see my stepdad drive by. He, 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 He going towards the tunnels. And about 10 seconds later, the whole building is surrounded by FBI agents.
That you're in? The building you're in?
The whole building is surrounded by FBI agents.
But your dad's not. He took off.
Yeah, he took off. Okay. He didn't stop. So they come in, big old rifles and everything. They come in and they take everything out the building. I'm 16 at the time. They take everything out the building. And come to find out, you know, he's being indicted.
Wow.
And so I remember going to school and FBI trucks followed me to school, followed me to the boxing gym. And he took care of me my whole life up to this point. And that's when, at that point, money just stopped for me. Like, my whole life just flipped. So I was going to school one day. I went to Central High School. I'm driving to school one day and I stop at Sonic, one of the restaurants on Highway 58. And a man comes up beside me and he hands me a wad of cash. And I didn't even know this man at the point. He had a hat on, he cut his beard and everything. It's my stepdad. He said, "Son, I love you. You probably won't see me for a long time." Last time I saw him outside of bars. And so at this point I was going to Central High School, but we was living in Hickson. And I remember coming home and we had no electric, no food. My mom was like scared, super scared. She's out of her mind. And I remember having to like sleep in the car, like to charge my phone, still get up and go to school the next day. And that's when I decided, you know, suck it up. I got to get stuff done. So, it's time to go to fight for to make the Olympics. So I fly to Denver, Colorado, and my first fight, I'm fighting, you know, to represent the United States in the Olympics.
Now, wait, before you go there. So you're having all this trouble in your life, and is somewhere in the back of your mind like, I should be training for the Olympics, or this is an opportunity for me to get out of this situation, or where was that thought for you?
You know, at that point in my life, I don't think I had no thought process as, you know, I really don't know my thought process.
But was your coach kind of like, "Hey, man, we got the Olympics here"?
No,
like where were you just kind of?
Everything was weary at this time. I'm struggling in school because, like, I had no guidance at this point in my life. Like, my mom didn't care if I went to school. Like, she was so shook. Like, she wasn't a mom anymore. Mm-hmm. She was not a parent anymore. Like, it was me on my own.
Right.
So at 16 years old. So, I'm getting ready to go to the Olympics. I'm still training, but not as focused as I would be because I have no money, no electric, no food. You familiar with the YCAP?
Yeah.
So I used to go to the YCAP and take canned food and eat canned food, you know, for dinner.
Now tell for people that aren't familiar with it, what is the YCAP?
So YCAP is the program that I didn't go through the program, but like I was always around the program. It's a program that helps the inner city kids, you know, with boxing, after school program. Mm-hmm. Great for, you know, keeping kids out of trouble. And 1,001 kids went through the program that I'm friends with came through this program. So it's a great deal that they do for the community. But I was taking canned food from the YCAP to feed myself. And so I go out to Denver, and my first fight, I fight a guy named Robert Easter. Mm. And he beats me 13-9. And from that point over, I thought my dreams was crushed. So I come back to Chattanooga, and reality hits me even harder. Now I got to figure out how I'm going to survive through life. So the Volkswagen plant had like just opened somewhere around that time. So I got a job at Volkswagen in a factory plant. I'm just graduated high school. So I think I'm 17, 18 around this time. Graduated high school. I didn't even go to my graduation. I emailed my principal, said, "Hey, can you email me my diploma?" So I got my diploma in the email. And so I started working at Volkswagen, and 12-hour shifts. Mm. 12-hour shifts, sleep 12 hours. It was like repeat. Like, and one day I just sat back in my chair and I was just like, "No, this can't be it for me. And I got to get back in boxing." So I jumped back in boxing.
So you weren't training at all?
I wasn't training at all. I was just working and, you know, trying to figure out what I'm going to do.
Stay in any kind of shape or anything?
I was still in decent shape. I was just so lost in life at this point.
Man, 12-hour shifts on, 12 hours off. There's not a lot of time to...
Not a lot of time to do anything. Right. I was sleeping. And it was swing shift. So, you know, it'd change every, you know, 2 days. I was still living with my mom at the time. She was still going through her trials and tribulations with the court system. So in the midst of that time, it was time for sentencing. My stepdad turned himself in, and he ended up getting 26 years. Wow. My mom ended up not serving any time. She got off or whatever.
So what is it that they got in trouble for?
Selling crack cocaine.
Allegedly.
Crack cocaine.
Okay. And that brought the FBI, so it must have been a pretty big operation.
I think it was like 9 people involved from Atlanta, Memphis, and Chattanooga. So it was a pretty big deal. And so my mom, me and her got into an altercation where she ended up putting me out the house. And I always tell people, I've been on my own since I was 16. Since I was 16, I feel like I've been on my own to survive for myself. And I feel like in life, between boxing and my stepdad has taught me everything I need to know to survive. Like, be a man, no matter what, go out and get it. Get it done. And, so I moved to Red Bank. I got my own apartment in Red Bank. I'm living on my own. And I quit Volkswagen. And I said, I got to get back in boxing. So I get back into boxing. I win a tournament. And then, I worked at Smokey Bones, too. I worked at Smokey Bones. I remember walking from Hickson, Tennessee to the mall area.
Mm-hmm.
I walked.
Wow.
That's a long walk.
It's like 12 miles.
That's a long walk. And I did it repeatedly. Like, I just had to do what I had to do to survive. And I ended up starting cutting grass in Hickson. I was cutting grass in Hickson for $20 a yard. All right. So, and one day, it was September 9th. I remember September 9th, 2013. I get a phone call from New York City. I don't know anybody from New York City, not one person. So I decline the phone call, and I get the number calls back, and I decline again. He leaves a voicemail. It's 50 Cent. he leaves a voicemail. He said, "Hey, yo, it's the Kid 50. I heard a lot about you. I looked at some videos. A lot of people are talking about you. Call me back and I'll see if we can get a deal done." So,
did you think that was fake?
I thought it was fake.
Of course you did.
Yeah, like, I was like, it's no way that 50 Cent is calling me. So my girlfriend, I ran to her and I showed her the voice message and she said, "Call him back." And then also I went to my coach and he didn't believe it. So I ended up calling him back and he was like, "Hey, I want to fly up to New York. So we're going to sit down, see if we can get a deal done. And so you can start professionally fighting." So I'm like, I just went from like, you know, cutting grass for $20 a yard to getting on the phone with 50 Cent. Like, you know, something. No, I got to do this. So after I called him back, I went to my coach in here and I said, "Hey, I got an opportunity to turn professional. What do you think about it?" He told me no. He was totally against it.
Why did he? What? Would he not think you were ready?
No, he just... So Chattanooga isn't a big boxing community. Mm-hmm. So if somebody doesn't know about professional boxing or don't know that industry, you're pretty much going to shy away from it, I guess. And but my whole life has been around boxing. What else? Like, I dedicate my whole life to the sport. What else am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
School wasn't my biggest thing because I dedicate my whole life to boxing. In school, at Central High School, I was loved at Central High School because I was winning all these tournaments. I love Central High School, but they sucked at football and basketball.
Right. And wrestling.
Yeah, and when I was on the news, I always shouted out my school and everything, and they loved me for that. I was winning everything. Like, I seen everything. I was winning everything. And the mayor gave me proclamations and rewards. The last mayor, I can't remember his name.
Littlefield.
No, before that. I mean, after that.
After Littlefield?
Yes.
Andy Burke?
Yes, Burke.
Yeah.
He gave me, like, I met him multiple times. He always said good things about me. So, yeah. So, Andy Smith, they didn't believe in professional boxing at this time. So, I had to make a choice. I flew to New York. And I sat down with 50 Cent. In Manhattan, we sit down in his office. And his office is about the size Well, his office is pretty big, but we had a table like this, and he slides me some money. It's like $25,000 or whatever. I just went from making 20 bucks a yard. So I'm going home with maybe 60 bucks a day
to versus 25 grand
right here. And I had no representation, no lawyer, no anything like that. So I signed a contract. It was a 4-year contract with extensions. No, if I did this, I did that, it extended. No, 2 years each time I did it. So this 4-year contract ended up turning into like a 10-year contract. With no way to get out. So I accomplished everything, and 50 Cent gets in trouble, like some kind of legal trouble where some woman was suing him for putting out a sex tape or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I just started making money. Not enough money to, you know, to retire or anything, but I just started making money, more than making 20 bucks a yard. So he filed bankruptcy. I'm included in the bankruptcy. And I'm calling 50 Cent. I'm texting him. I'm saying, hey, you know, can we work out a deal to where you let me go so I can move on my career? I don't have money like you have. You know, you can sit here and do this. I can't. I have to, you know, continue what I'm doing, make a living. And months go by, I hear nothing from him, no communication at all. And this is a man who is my promoter. And we had an open communication. Like, I talked to this guy for years every day. A very smart guy. You know, probably one of the smartest guys I ever met. And so finally, we come on an agreement where I had to pay him, you know, X amount of percentage over a course of years. And we still keep a relationship to today, you know, not as close as we was, but you know, I still talk to him every now and then.
Are you out of that contract?
The contract is over with. Everything is square between us. But I remember going through that time with him where the boxing media outlet would try to get me to say something angry about him or something bad about him. And I would never have something bad to say about a man who gave me a start in my career or helped me. I was cutting grass when he called me, and I couldn't say I wouldn't be where I'm at without him, but he helped me get to where I'm at today. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that he actually like reached out to me to turn professional. I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Like, how many professional boxers come from Chattanooga, Tennessee?
Has there ever been one?
Yes, but not on a level I'm on. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to them, but
right.
It's really like, you know, levels to boxing, and I'm that good. So moving forward, I'm living in Cleveland, Ohio at the time. And 2016, I get a phone call at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Me and my girlfriend are in our place, and I get a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's from Chattanooga PD. And like, I'm very friendly with some of the officers, and I get a phone call like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, this is weird. And it's the Detective Scrubs. He calls me. He's like, hey, Ryan, I got some news to tell you. Your little brother is, you know, dead.
Oh, man.
So I'm like, what? He's supposed to be off in college. So he ended up coming home for, I think it was Christmas break. He comes home and he gets in a car with some of his friends. Uh-huh. And he's right on Brandon Road, and he went up one of the back alleyways. He's sitting in the front seat. He got somebody driving, and two of his other friends are in the back seat. And in the car, this is what they assume happened. One of the friends in the back of the car, and sitting behind him, shoots him in the shoulder. So somehow he opens the door, he falls out the car, and he's running up the street. And all the guys get out the car and they start shooting at him. So he ended up getting shot like 15 times, 3 times in the head. And the Chattanooga police say it's one of the worst scenes they ever seen.
Wow.
They found him sitting on his knees, folded over. Like, he was like basically standing up dead. And so I flew down the next day. I never cried that hard in my life, actually. I flew down the next day, and I got to go see him at the morgue, fresh. And it was the most gruesome thing I ever seen. You know, seeing my little brother, you know, like that, and it's like
that's terrible,
it's pretty bad. Just seeing him like that was like, wow. It just brings everything to center. I guess thinking about it just brings tears to my eyes. But even at the funeral, like, to talk about him, this one, gang violence in Chattanooga was at its highest. I don't even know what to say right now, but
how do you rebound from that? Is that the lowest of the low?
That's probably the lowest I've been in my life. Well, no, actually, I actually been close to that, but that right there was heartbreaking for me, and that made me not want to come back to Chattanooga. The only reason I really come back to Chattanooga is I actually love the city, and my girlfriend family here is like family to me. But just going through that situation is like, I would never want any parent to go through that situation. Like seeing, even though his dad, we don't have the same dad. He's my half brother,
right?
But he's basically, we grew up together. But his dad's in jail, and his mom, seeing her cry, like no parent should ever have to witness that in the way that it happened, and the images that I seen that I can never forget of his face. Like, he had gunshot wounds through his face, and they tried to restructure his face, and it just was horrible. But moving on from that, just, you know, I take that in the ring with me. I take that anger in the ring with me, and I try to use it to my advantage the best way I can. But moving forward from that, I end up moving from Cleveland, Ohio to California. I started training in Big Bear Lake, California. And it's at altitude. And if you ever been to Big Bear Lake, California, it's only like two restaurants and two grocery stores. And so I've been up there for four, maybe almost 5 years. Now, we lived in this house. It's a compound. And I was the only American there for all these years. The rest of them was Russians and someone from Kazakhstan, stuff like that. So we formed a brotherhood. We just couldn't speak to each other because the language barrier. But in a gym, we all spoke the same language. Like, it was like amazing. And this was when U.S. and Russia was going through things.
Right.
And I got a video that came up on my phone from memories that I said, you know, all this attention going on between U.S. and Russia, and I have Russian friends. And we created this super strong bond. But in the ring, in the gym, we murder each other. And we really try to kill each other, but that made us better.
So it's interesting. Like, how do you become friends with somebody that you can't communicate with? I mean, is there just unspoken communication?
It's unspoken communication and the dedication. Like, you can feel when somebody's dedicated to something because you're dedicated to. Like, we have the same passion for this. So when we spar, we really try to make each other better by giving our best. And the way this was set up, so we lived in this house, and let's say it was like this room. Nobody had their own room. It was like we had our own beds, and it was separated by curtains. And so all we did was train and sleep every day. And, you know, we try to communicate, but it just wasn't there. And,
could you at least get names? And
We got names. And just the hard work and dedication that we went through, it just, like, you grind with your brothers. You work hard with your brothers.
So you're in one way, you're surrounded by people that, you know, respect and
yes.
love you.
Yes.
In another way, you're isolated more so than maybe ever in your life.
Ever.
Right after
life.
Your brother
yes.
has been yeah. murdered. So how was that to deal with? Were you
dealing
going
with
back
that,
and forth on feeling like, this is a good place, and then, man, I'm so... I can imagine you were just incredibly lonely there.
Dealing with that now that I understand now is it was at the start of a depression. It was the start of a very deep depression, which you don't know until you come out of it. I was talking to a therapist, but not strongly because she was based here in Chattanooga. So we would get on the phone call every Sunday. And some Sundays I just didn't feel like talking. Like, I'm not a very open person. It takes a while for me to talk about my feelings because I like to think about my feelings before I speak. And so in the midst of this time, I'm still fighting. I'm still trying to, you know, live my life. And so at this point, 2018, the biggest fight of my career, I'm fighting the champion in Scotland. And his name is Josh Taylor. And the most money I'm making, the biggest fight of my career, you think everything will be going smooth. This is the worst time of my career because I'm in a depression. I don't know it yet, but I'm in a depression. So, and I'm by myself in Big Bear. My manager doesn't come and see me. I have no friends come and see me. I'm just there. And I fly to Russia.
With the Russians and,
yeah,
and all those people?
Everybody's
but,
up there.
But
yeah.
Nobody else.
Nobody knows. Like, even my coach, he knew something was wrong, but I didn't have that relationship with my coach to where I could talk to him about certain things. I just always went to the gym and I just did my work. It was like I was going through the motions. Mentally, I wasn't there at all mentally. Mm-hmm. Physically, I was ready. Mentally, I was gone. So I fly to Russia. I do the whole media thing. I come back to Big Bear. I train. So fight weeks come up and I'm trying to get myself ready. So I remember laying in bed and I call my girlfriend and I say, I don't think I can do this. And my girlfriend's tough. She's like, what you mean you can't do this? You already did this. You already signed a contract. Get it done. So she didn't really know what was going on with me either. So I'm like, okay, let's get this out the way. Fly to Scotland and I just wasn't there. I remember walking down the pathway, and the pathway to me seems like 2 miles long. And everybody's yelling at me and, you know, throwing things at me, spitting at me. So the bell rings and I just know that I'm mentally not there. Even if you see the fight on YouTube, you see something's not right. Like, I don't throw any punches. I'm just there. And that's my first defeat. And it felt, to be honest, I never said this, but it felt like a shoulder was lifted. I mean, a weight was lifted off my shoulders. It felt like I was relieved.
Because you lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hear that with other fighters that say that.
Like, yeah. I think more because it was so much pressure on me to win this fight. And today it's acceptable to talk about what you're going through mentally. A few years ago, it wasn't okay for you to talk about what's going on with you mentally, especially as an athlete.
Right.
Nobody cared.
Tyson Fury's been very open about
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Like, he had a very
Speaking of that, I met Tyson Fury a few weeks before my fight, and he came to Big Bear.
Did he?
He flew in on a helicopter, and he got out the helicopter with this $100,000 suit on. Right? And we went to dinner. And he rented out this like $40,000. He paid $40,000 a month for this house in Big Bear or stuff like that. Something crazy. Like he's wild. And he gets there. He said, "Hey, where's the party at?" And I'm like, Tyson, we in Big Bear. It's no clubs, no parties or anything up here. He stays for 2 days. He leaves. He goes to L.A. He moved his whole training camp to L.A. because it was up in Big Bear. It's really. You're locked in. It's nothing up there at all. And you get stuck up there when it starts snowing, you can't go down. But so that is good and bad being there, because if you don't have anybody to talk to, like what's on your mind, if you just hold it in, and that's anything in life, like even on a regular basis, if you going through something and you hold it in, it's gonna eat you. It's gonna eat you alive and it's gonna bring you down unless you talk about it. And that's what happened to me. That's how I fell into my depression. And I wish I had somebody to talk to about my depression. Even my girlfriend, like, I talked to her about everything, but it's just, this was something where I just felt, I didn't know how to express it without being angry.
So as soon as you would talk about it, you'd get angry?
Yeah, it makes me very angry. And I don't know why.
Well, I do. I mean, the story that you've told to this point, and I'm sure there's more, that's incredible. I mean, why it would be incredibly surprising if you weren't angry.
Yeah, it's just like even my parents, it just angers me how I feel like they failed me as parents. I really do. Until I turned professional is when our relationship got better. They see my life as a trophy. Like, I never had that parent love. I never felt like they did everything they needed to do to, you know, show me love. So even I struggle like that with my girlfriend today. I'm not family oriented, but she is. So sometimes we butt heads on family things. But you know, I carry all this into the ring, and that's why I love boxing. That's why I'm so connected to the sport, because it's just me. When you in that square ring, you're exposed. Everything's exposed. Like, you can't hide anything. All eyes are on you. And the man across from you is probably going through the same thing. Boxing is a poor man's sport. Boxing is two gladiators fighting for survival. And that man wants to kill you. And that's how it really is. It's modern day gladiators. And every time I strap on my boots to go to war, like, it brings me joy. It's like when I step in that ring, everything outside doesn't matter. But that's a lie. It does matter. Because if I go into the ring thinking about outside things, mm-hmm. I'm unfocused. And it's going to show. It don't matter if it's going to show from round 1, 2, 3, 4. It's going to show between those 12 rounds. Something's going
to
show.
So one of the things that I like to get stories about, like yours, is that your story is extreme. And then what you do is super extreme. So if you can explain the way that you stay focused and you can put all of this other stuff aside, the regular person can learn how to put little minor things aside, right? Like, you've got really, really major things that you're putting aside to get in that ring and stay 100% focused. And at that level, the tiniest bit unfocused,
right,
could cost knocked you. Out.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So how do you do that?
Honestly, I never been asked that question before. How do I do it? Boxing just brings me joy. It's just, you know, my whole life's been dedicated to it. And, you know, I would say my girlfriend is my shield. She tries to take all the distractions and bottle it up until after the fight. So no matter what's going on between me and her or whatever, if let's say my mom call and like always she needs something, she will hold it in until after the fight. And I really appreciate that she does that, because she knows that how important this is for not just me, but her. This is how I make my living. This is how I want to support my family. So staying focused is 90% of the boxing game. It's only 10% physical. Everybody at the level I'm at can fight. Everybody. It's who has that mental toughness to overcome when you're hurt, when you're down, when you, you know, going through things outside the ring. And just recently, it become okay to pull out a fight because you're going through a tough time mentally. If it was okay 5 years ago, I'd be in a different position. I could have got help. I could have talked about my, you know, things I was going through. And still today, people really don't know my story. Because even before then, I'd be like, of course, we know everybody go through things in life. Everybody. It just matter how you deal with it and how you come out of it. But the thing I like to do when I'm in Chattanooga, because I went through these things, even as a kid, I grew up in Highland Park before it was what it is now. And I grew up around gangbangers and, you know, bad situations. And my whole life was, I was taught what not to do. I was never taught what to do.
In that environment, what is what not to do?
Live how my parents live.
So you're learning by example, don't be a crack dealer.
Yes, don't do that. And don't, like, what was really big on me is having a mom and dad, having two parents in the same household, having a marriage, like a marriage that I can view that I want to be like. I never had that. And me and my girlfriend have been together for 8 years. And between both of our families, that's the longest relationship has been in our family.
Nobody's ever gone.
Nobody ever. And it's sad. Like, and the kids today in our community go through that all the time. They go through, you know, some kids go through it 10 times worse than I did. And they still have to get up and go to school, perform, and do these things. But you just have to know what not to do and what you want. So when I was living in Highland Park, the Smiths used to pick me up basically every day. I basically lived with them, and they took me to Hixson. And Hixson to me was like Miami. It was like a different world. And it was just a couple miles away. But that changed my life because I got to see something different. I got to see a little bit of success. And that's why I gravitate to boxing so much. If I can do good here, it can change my life. It can alter. It can break the family curse. It can
break the chain.
Not the curse. Yeah, the chain. It can break the chain. Like, and so many people are living in a cycle. Mm-hmm. I have friends who mom got pregnant at 16. Their daughter got pregnant at 16. Their daughter gonna get pregnant at 16. And it's true.
So what does that look like to you? Let's just say that you break the cycle. Let's say you break the chain and you can blue sky it. What does that look like to you?
Meaning, how would you be?
Like, how does it look like to me? How do you want your life to be? How do you want to break that chain, and what life do you want to live?
I want to live a life to where I'm setting my kids up for a better life that they don't have to go through things that I went through. That's one of my biggest goals. It personally to me is to give my kids a childhood that I never had. I didn't feel like I ever had a childhood, and like a real childhood to where, you know, I can't recall memories with my mom. All I can remember is me taking her to dinner. Like, it's just some kids, your childhood should be a childhood. No matter what, like, a child should be able to enjoy itself. And, you know, it's just so much that I want to do for my family that I didn't have. Being family oriented, I want to be family oriented. I want to have my family close. But how do you do that if you never had that example?
Right. So that was the next question. So how do you do that? You seek out mentors? Do you?
Yeah, you seek out mentors. No, Ted Allen, he don't even know it. He motivates me so much. Even as a kid, like, I never looked at Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson as a person I wanted to be like. I was motivated by not being how my parents was. How, like, my dad, I remember him telling me for years as a kid, he's going to send me a Christmas gift. Never got it. I remember me waiting.
Man.
And I still think about it today. And you know, what I still struggle with today, and I prayed on it a lot, is forgiveness. And some days I feel like I can forgive, and some days it comes back. And it's with my parents. Like, I really remember waiting for gifts from my dad. We talk now more than ever. And I know why. I really do.
Why?
Because I'm a professional fighter. And he's proud of that. And, you know, when I was an amateur, I had 222 amateur fights. Guess how many my parents came to?
Zero.
About two.
Two.
Yeah. Two. Guess how many professional fights they've been to?
Every one of them?
Almost every one of them. Yeah.
Do you fly them out there? No. Do you?
I get them tickets.
Some of these are in Scotland and other places?
Yeah. They come to the really big ones, and no, they are my parents, and I give them tickets, and these tickets aren't cheap. So for one story, so I had one of my big fights in Vegas. Tickets was like $25,000, right? I don't get tickets. I had to pay for tickets. I fight and I watched it in the back. But this event was Triple G versus Canelo.
Oh, wow.
One of the biggest fights of the past 10 years. So tickets was $25,000 floor seats. So the promoter gave me a discount. So I paid like $5,000 for each ticket. I got four tickets. I got one for me, my girlfriend, with my coach, and my mom. My mom posted it on Facebook. She said, "My son must really love me." And I was like, why would you do that? Like, me buying a ticket doesn't have nothing to do with love. You know, you out here and I just want to, you know, get you a ticket. It has nothing to do with love. But most recently, this story right here. So during the pandemic, only had one fight. And this fight, I felt I was so ready for it. And it was my rematch with Robert Easter, the guy who beat me in the Olympics. I'm friends with him. Even before we decided to fight each other, we had a friendship. We developed a friendship because he was living in Toledo, Ohio, and I was living in Cleveland, Ohio. So we developed a friendship. Now it's time for us to fight each other in professionals. Now I got a chip on my shoulder because you beat me to go to the Olympics. So now I'm more than ready. So at my whole mindset changed for this fight. Around this time last year, no, 2 years ago, around this time, I found out we was fighting each other. So my mind said, I'm prepared to die. Really. Every day I went to sleep, I told myself, I'm prepared to die for about 5 months. I'm prepared to die, prepared to die, I'm prepared to die. Every day I laid down, prepared to die. So fight week comes, and we're in a bubble. So it's no crowd. No.
Because of COVID.
Right. It's the weirdest thing ever. I would never want to go through this again. No crowd. I had to stay in my hotel room for 48 hours. I couldn't leave my hotel room. It was awful. So fight night comes up. My security is taking me to my dressing room. And I'm typing a message to my mom and my dad. And we talk on Facebook. We don't talk on the phone. We talk on Facebook. This kind of relationship I have with my parents. And I typed them a message. Both similar same messages. And I said something like, "No, hey, I love you. Thank you for, you know, being my parents. And thank you for things that you've done for me. You know, just a real sincere message." And I send that, turn my phone off. I tell my girlfriend, "No, hey, I love you. Thank you for being here with me. Thank you for, you know, being who you are for me and everything." And a couple of my friends and stuff like that. And I'm prepared to die. So I go into the ring and, you know, this is like, I'm going to give it everything I got. Like, because as a boxer, you want to go over the strategy. And, but this, I had so much anger in me because he beat me. Yeah. So I'm going, like, boxing is very dangerous. And you never know if one shot can change your whole life. And but after that, so the message I sent to my mom, this is the point of the story. The message I sent to my mom, she posted it on Facebook. Can you believe that?
Super sincere message.
She posted on Facebook. And I never even talked to her about it. It's just like, what do I post? How do I address that? And like, she called me sometimes and asked me for stuff. And I don't respond. Because it's like, she wants me to take care of her. You never even took care of me. But I know I shouldn't hold that against her. But I only get paid when I fight. I didn't have somebody teach me how to, Like, this is another thing with the school system. I think the school system need to teach kids finances.
Sure they do.
How to balance the check. I didn't learn none of this until, you know, 4 years into my professional career. And she just thinks my life is like free all, be all. I don't have no bills, no responsibilities. Like, no, it's like I only get paid when I fight. So I have to balance myself. She works a job. Like, how you never have any money? I don't understand that. So she called me for, she need this bill paid. She had one incident 2 years ago. She moved out her boyfriend's house. This was Christmas Eve. She needed a place to live. So I got her apartment. We're moving in on Christmas Eve. Mm. I was so irritated. And she ended up moving out a few months later, back in with her boyfriend. It's just, I feel like her life is just up and down. And right. I just hope one day she get it together.
That's part of breaking the chain, though.
Exactly.
Right? Like, that's part of breaking the chain. Yeah. You see that and you don't want that.
Yeah.
And so you need to create stability in your life.
Yeah.
And then there's the forgiveness.
And then meanwhile, my stepdad is still in jail. Right. And
it couldn't be more stable than that. Like, that's, you know what? I mean, that's like every single day is the same.
Yeah.
The
and
same
then
thing.
Like, talking with him is like living in the past. He's been in there for, you know, maybe I think 15 years so far. And it's like talking a tape recorder every day. And it's sad. But he know what he did, and I mean, no, I love him to death, and you know, but reality hasn't hit him yet. When he gets out, it's going to be, he'd be 60 something years old when he gets out.
Yeah,
no, have nothing, have absolutely nothing. And I try to tell kids today who want to be a gangster or want to be this or that, what the rappers rap about today, they don't really live that life. They just selling it. And some of these kids really want to live that life, and it's no retirement from that life.
Right.
It's only two places that you guaranteed to go, dead or in jail. It's only two places guaranteed. It's only two places guaranteed. And I seen that 20 times. No drug dealer retires. You just don't. And some kids just don't get that. And
but it's I mean, a larger commentary is, how would they, right? Like, if when you go back to like your upbringing, you're surrounded by all these people, and that is success, is being the drug dealer. That's the mentor. That's the only example you have to look for. So how would they know that there's something else? That's really where I look at it, and I'm like, man, that seems like the source.
Yeah.
Right there is that if there's a problem or anything, there, usually you go to the source of the problem, and maybe you can change that, which changes everything associated with it. Right. So if the source of the problem is that there's not one example in a young person's life of someone not ending up dead or in jail, then how would they?
I think it's
how would they do better?
I think it's up to that individual. I think it's ultimately up to that individual. You can have all the sources in the world. You can have all the examples in the world, and we see it today. Some kids have everything they need and still choose to go left.
Right,
and it's just, you know, your ambition. What do you want to do with your life? I had none of that, but I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted more. I knew I wanted to have something I never had or seen. Even still today, like, you know, that's the drive that's in me, and it's just in you. It has to be in you. And you know, and I'm grateful today to people I have around me to, you know, to drive me more. It's like it's a never ending thing. Because once, I think for men, once you stop striving, you're dying. I believe that once you stop moving, what is it? What else is there for you to do? And I think that's in man nature is to provide, to lead. We're all alpha males. We're all, you know, want to be the best we can as a man. And if you don't want to do that, then...
Do you think we all want to do that? Because I think select people.
Select people. I don't think we all want to do it. I think some of us are just comfortable where we at. Some of us are just... And I have family members that's like that. And I just don't understand it. I just don't understand how can you be content with this. Like...
And so how do you separate yourself from that? How do you take steps that leads you to a place that you want to be? You're basically climbing out of despair, basically, and you're doing it. I mean, you're doing it. You're a two-time world champion. First of all, you've made unbelievable, incredible accomplishments in the athletic.
Yeah.
In the athletic realm, but you're also doing it on a personal level.
Yes.
Now there are tons of people that we were talking about just before. Some guy got a whole bunch of money. He buys a Lamborghini or something. He crashes it into somebody else and he's done.
Yeah.
Right. Like money is not the answer.
Yeah.
Money may be even a faster road to the problem of being dead or in jail. Right.
Yes.
So, when you're successful in the athletic realm, you still have to overcome this personal thing, which is a mindset. It is, learning from other people. I don't know what it is for you, but you're doing it.
So success for me is, success for everybody is different. Yeah. Success is whatever you choose, whatever your goal is. Don't let somebody else set your goal for you. And, you can be successful in academics, sports, whatever you choose to be. When I go talk to kids, most of the kids think they want successful in sports. No, that's only a little bit of your life. You have to live life after sports. You don't live life in sports forever. So how I judge my success is that I'm able to do something I love. So it never feels like work. I am passionate about what I do. I did it for free for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just in love with it. I'm in love with the bad and the good of it. It's just phenomenal that I get to, do this for a living. And most people don't. Most people don't even get to don't even step into what they love to do. And so a lot of various reasons why it's like that. But if you can find something that you're passionate about and you get to do it, no matter if it's no matter what it is, if you love it, you're successful. And nobody can take that away from you at all. No matter if you're successful at this one point in life and then it all goes downhill, you hit success. And a lot of people who don't do nothing in life are going to talk about you. They're going to talk about you when you're down. What else they got to do? And when I lost my first fight, so many people waited for years for that moment. And
they're like, I knew it.
Yeah.
He's a bum.
Yeah,
he's always been a bum.
And that,
even though he's won 222 fights.
and that drives me. It like lights a fire under my ass. It really does. Like, those words, like, I told you so. I never want anybody to say that about me. I told you so. I told you, unless it's like, I told you he'll win. I told you he'd get that. But when somebody say, I told you he'll lose, it just drives me. But not everybody have that kind of mindset.
Yeah. But you know what?
And like your post outside says, it's all about the mindset.
Mindset's
like,
everything.
It really is. Like, if you set your mind to something, it's going to get done. If I seen something today, I think Jeff Bezos said it. If your mindset is to clean your room in 6 days, it's going to take you 6 days to do it. If you decide to do it in one day, it's going to be 1 day. So, you set your goals and it's going to get done. If you set a goal and you have no time limit on it, it's never going to get done. Never, ever. So, I wake every day ready to go, ready to tackle the day, my weeks, And, I just try to motivate people to whatever you choose to do in life, do it, give it your all. No, live. Don't live in the moment. And that's something I struggle with too. We talked about it earlier, is living in the moment. I had 24 professional fights, and I can't remember one of them. And I fought at Madison Square Garden, and it was the best night of my career, still today, because of, first of all, Madison Square Garden is like right. The Mecca. And I remember walking down my hallway, and I seen Michael Jackson's name and the Beatles, Whitney Houston and John Legend, John Lennon, all these names on this wall. These people walk down this alleyway like, holy crap, I'm here too. I'm in a dressing room where these people sat and got ready like I'm getting ready. And I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Like, I never thought that I'd be in this position. Like, I'm just doing what I love, and look where it landed me. And I remember walking out into the ring, 40,000 people screaming, the ground is shaking. And this is the only time I knew I was in the moment, because I actually said, holy shit, like, I'm here. That's the only time I ever did that. Like, it was like an out of body experience, and I ended up knocking the guy out in the eighth round. And just the fans and everything was just so surreal. It was like, I had family and friends who came to support, and it was just amazing. It was so good that I forgot to pick up my check after the fight. It was that good. And but any other of my fights, I was always looking for what's next. After the fight, I'm always like, what's next? Even the media come to me like, hey, so what's next for you? And that automatically triggers me to what's next. So I'm thinking ahead, not living in the present, enjoying all the work that I put in, and enjoying my team and everybody that's around me. Like, you shouldn't live like that. You should enjoy the fruits of your labor. And right now I'm in such a good spot mentally, spiritually, that I'm like super happy. And a happy fighter is a dangerous fighter. Mm. A happy person is an unstoppable person. And just having good people around me, it takes your spirits to the roof. Even meeting you, like when I first met you, I said, yeah, this is the guy. Like, you're like, we worked out for 2.5 hours. And it's like, who does that?
A lot of people have said that.
So it's like, and I'm like, we match each other's energy. And it's just like, I don't have too many people around me that can do that. Like, I have two friends my age, and our friendship is on a string, because life takes us different ways. Like, these was my really close friends through high school, and kids come in. No, you want to smoke every day. I don't do that. I don't party. I don't hang out. My life is my career. Mm-hmm. I'm so focused. So I don't go out. I don't hang out for no reason. Why would I spend 4 hours of my life partying for no reason? I don't understand. I really don't. Like, why am I doing this?
You just went backwards. 3 weeks.
Exactly. You know? I just don't. And I'm grateful my girlfriend isn't like that either. Like, we can stay at home. That's why the pandemic didn't change my life not one bit. Not one bit. Not people change, like, oh, I'm stuck at home. People panicking. Oh, we can't go nowhere. We can't do this. I do this every day anyway. So it's nothing different to me. I train, come home, sleep. That's my life. I got stuck in Florida. That's the only thing that changed. But hey, who complains when they're in Florida? Florida didn't shut down. Nothing changed. So it was, no, life is still the same through the pandemic for me, except for when the toilet paper went out. But yeah, man, my story is is still being written. And also, you wouldn't believe this, so Tyler Perry actually got, well, somebody who works for Tyler Perry got in touch with me and about a script of, about like, my story or whatever. It was something crazy. They reached out to my girlfriend, actually, and she told me about it. So I have an opportunity to work with him on a storyline. So I'm super excited about that. And it's just, and if that can happen, man, that'll be, I don't even know. It's out of nowhere. It just came up, but that'd be something incredible.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, it would be.
But you know what? If that doesn't happen, you'll make still, something else incredible.
Still incredible.
That's not the only thing, man. Yeah. When you've got the attitude that you do and you've got the direction and the trajectory that you're going, that opportunity may come, it may go, but there'll be others. Yeah, you'll create other opportunities.
100%.
And it's not like, I mean, that's like the scarcity mindset versus the abundance mindset of, you know, that opportunity may happen. It may not. Yeah. Like lots of people get movie people come to them with movie deals or TV deals or whatever. And it doesn't work out. And that's fine. Right. Yep. You're going to learn a ton of stuff in the process. And if it works out, it's going to be awesome. If it doesn't work out, you're going to take what you learn and you're going to apply it somewhere else. And you'll end up somewhere else.
And that's what life is all about. Taking what you've been through and applying it for what's next. No, some people just don't get that concept. Yeah. some people don't.
So now you're embarking on a new chapter, really.
Yes.
Like you're right now you're a little bit in limbo. You're about to go to a new team. Like what is next? I mean, we talked about living in the moment. Yeah. But what is next?
So I just signed my new management contract with this great guy from his name is Ken Jones. I just, my new manager, so so many names. He's based in LA, so hardworking guy. I'm definitely looking forward to, I'm meeting him next week, actually. But I'm heading to Colorado Springs, Colorado. So I'll be training there, and then between there and Omaha, Nebraska. So I'm very excited to be, you know, isolated again. And I'm very excited to be training with Terrence Crawford. He's number 2 pound-for-pound fighter in the world.
Wow.
And he's actually fighting November 20th in Vegas.
Is he your weight? What
he's,
weight does he?
Weight class, two weight classes above me.
So what is your weight class?
My weight class is super lightweight.
How many pounds?
I'm in between lightweight and super lightweight, so 135 and 140. Okay. So I'll be fighting between both of them. But I will be sparring with Terrence. No. I'm the type of guy that my pride is like gets in the way of everything. And it can be a bad thing, it can be a good thing. That's why you need other people around you to tell you, no, you ain't doing that. So I don't back down from any challenge. I like to face my fears. And I think that's where a lot of people limit themselves. A lot of people limit themselves because they're scared. They're scared to take a chance. You can't be scared to take a chance. You'll never know what's going to be the outcome if you never do it. And I would say about 90 people in life are stopped because of that. Like, you know, people I've ran into that say, what if? If you just do it, it wouldn't be what if. Like, just do it and give it your all.
So they're saying, like, what if I did this, but then they never actually do it?
Right. Or what if this happens to me? Well, what if it don't? What is the other side of what if? Like, think about that. What if you do this and this comes out on the other side? Like, even some fighters, some local fighters here who say, I want to be like you. Well, if you want to be like me or be similar to me, you have to be ready to take risk. You have to, like, you can't be scared. You can't let your fear hold you back from success. Like, what if you get in there and you do this? It's a good thing. And I think 90% of people in the world live like that. And that's why they're limited to certain things. Like, just get out and do it.
Yeah. It's a self-limiting behavior, like a self-limiting belief that you can't do it. And then there's like stuff that I've struggled with before throughout my career. It's like you have the fear of failure. Like, what if I go in there and I get knocked out?
Yes.
But then there's also the fear of success. like, what if I go in there and I make all this money and then all my friends don't like me anymore and I have to move away. And, you know, now I'm living in this house over here and I don't have my friends anymore. A lot of people are limited by the fear of success. And
that's, actually, I never thought about that one before.
Yeah. Well, it's a real fear. And it's like, well, you know, I don't want to be too good because then I won't be popular anymore. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm sure you've experienced it in your life. When you start winning everything, people are like, oh, that guy again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When is he going to get beat? Like, and then they start talking, and then people that you thought were your friends start talking.
Yes.
And then, you know, that's a real tough one for, it was a real tough one for me to get over. Like, how do you deal with a fear of success? Because that is a real fear.
Yeah.
Just as limiting as a fear of failure. Because a lot of people won't even try because they're afraid they're going to fail. And then there's other people that won't even try because they're like, I know I could do it, but what's going to be the outcome of me doing it? That's a tough one. But you've done really good. And so you think this time next year, you're going to be fighting for another world title?
Yeah. So the plan that I heard from my manager is that this time next year, he wants to have me fighting for a title or in title contentions, which I'm super excited about that. As soon as it can happen, the better it is.
Well, I mean, you're already like in the mix, right?
Yeah,
like you're a two-time world champion. Yeah. So if you move to a different weight class or something, you're going to be considered as one of the top fighters.
Yeah, I'm definitely highly ranked. But
even if you move to a different organization?
It's all about moving in the right direction, moving the right way. As you know, you follow combat sports. It's all about matches, like who you match with, styles, and basically just being in the right position at the right time. You know, even look at Floyd Mayweather's career. He was in every position at the right time. When he fought Pacquiao, Pacquiao wasn't in his prime.
Right,
he's past his prime.
He's even hurt.
And
had a shoulder injury.
Right. And it's just like, and Floyd capitalized on that moment.
He's smart.
He's
got smart people around him.
Very smart. And you know what's funny? He never even graduated high school.
Well, there's a lot of different types of intelligence and there's a lot of different types of smart. And he obviously has
he
been.
He definitely
really
has
good.
It. Yeah.
And although he doesn't take care of his money very well.
Exactly. And he can't read. So
he can't read. Well, he gets hit in the head for a living, but he's only been hit like 5 times ever.
He just doesn't have his. I think he actually doesn't even have a high school education. I think middle school, he stopped going to school or something like that. So, you know, but he makes, he loves what he do, and he's very good at it. He's one of the best. Him and McGregor broke every pay-per-view record there was. So.
It's unbelievable what those guys did. They both have done incredibly well. So this time next year, we can watch you win another world title.
Yeah, and actually, I'll be back in the ring late January, early February. Hopefully, I'll either be fighting on a major streaming app or Showtime or ESPN. So I'm looking forward to that. And then one of my goals for my career is to fight here in Chattanooga.
Right on.
Yeah.
You can bring a big fight here.
That's my goal. It has to happen. And
we can... I know a couple of people that might be able to help that.
That has happened. That's been my goal for, but it all comes down to the right time, the right moment. And I think it'd be something special for the city, something special for me personally, to be able to fight at home. I've been to some of the majors, biggest venues in the world, and I don't think any of them will make me feel how I would feel when I fight here in front of people, the city that I love. No matter where I go, I always represent Chattanooga on my back. It's just, even all the places I live, I always come back to Chattanooga. Always. It's just, amazing city, amazing people. And this is just my core route. Like, this is my home. And I love it.
Right on, man. Well, it's, you're you're doing really awesome.
Thank you.
So I got two questions to close this out. In life, sometimes you have things that you can negotiate with, and then you have the non-negotiables, right? Things that you're going to wake up this morning, and before your head hits the pillow tonight, this is getting done or this is never going to get done. That's a non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what factors come into the day. All of a sudden you thought you were going to have time. Now you get real busy and you say, oh, I'm not going to do that today. But a non-negotiable, no matter what happens, that gets done. Or a non-negotiable is no matter what happens, I'll never do that. Right?
Yes.
What are your non-negotiables?
Ooh, that's a tough question. My non-negotiables.
It could be just one. It could be three. It could be whatever. Things that you just won't negotiate with yourself or anyone else on.
One that I'm working on right now is if me and my girlfriend have a problem fixing it. The other one is getting my miles in. I don't care if I don't get up in the morning and do it, it's going to get done some time between. I don't care if I have a busy schedule during the day. Even when I'm out doing media tours, I take my running shoes with me. Even if I'm like after a fight, or let's say I'm out and I'm having a good night out, my running shoes are in the car. That's non-negotiable. I have to get it done because I actually feel like, and I was in this position before in my life. If I don't get it done, it turns into a cycle. You miss one day, you're going to miss another day. You miss 2 days, you're going to miss a third day. And I always feel like I'm behind. I hate feeling behind. I hate feeling like I need to catch up. I was always taught that if you stay ahead, you'll never have to catch up. It's harder to catch up than anything else in life. And most people find that out on bills. Once you get behind on a bill, you get hit with late fees. It makes you so much harder to catch up, which I really don't understand. If somebody's behind and you hit them with a late fee and you're working a regular 9-to-5, it's so much harder to catch up.
Yeah. They're not doing it for you. They're doing it for them.
It's going to lead to other things that's going to get you behind. So,
oh, sure.
And that's something I dealt with growing up too, seeing that. So those are my two non-negotiable items.
Okay, I like it. All right, if everything was wiped away, your world titles, everything's gone for whatever reason, what are three things that you would want to leave for anyone?
Number one is inspiration. Does that count?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I want to inspire everyone. Like, no matter if you're older than me, younger than me, I feel like I can connect with everybody. I can give anybody motivation or inspire somebody to go after a new goal, go after an old goal, to change, to put an imprint on someone's life somehow. Maybe being the warrior they never could be. And being a good parent to my kids and just leaving a legacy. I don't care if it's to the public, but to my kids. And fix a relationship with my parents. That's one of my goals that I struggle with, and I'm on teeter-totters with it. Like, how do I do that? I don't even know if my parents are open to that. And I talk about this often with my girlfriend. Like, how do I dress my mom to go with me to talk about the things I want to talk about? Would she be open to that? I don't know. Would she be defensive about it? 100%. How would I react to her being defensive? Just her having better memories of her, like I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain. Just,
well, you know what? There's one way to find out.
Exactly. Get it done.
It's just like we just talked
and
about.
And that's negotiable, like, for me. Because, like, I can be like this one day, and then she, like, do something to him, and it's like, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So that's, but I think for my future kids, like to be inspiration to them that I never had from my parents, and, you know, inspiring other people's lives in some shape, form, or fashion.
Well, you're doing it, man. You're doing it right now. Ryan, this was amazing.
Yes.
It's incredible. Your story is incredible, and the way that you've rebounded and pulled yourself out
Thank
of it
so
to
much.
The
Thank
highest
you.
Heights.
Thank
it's,
you.
It's really amazing. And honestly, your story's just, it's just getting started.
Oh yeah, it is. It's definitely, it's going to be a lot more,
It's All right, man. Well, thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having
it.
Me. Thank you.
All right. If people want to follow you, what do they do?
You can follow me at Blue Chip Boxer on Instagram and Twitter. Facebook, Ryan D. Martin. I'm the everyday average person. I just like to hang out.
Let me tell you something.
Anybody want to go bowling?
Nothing, there's nothing everyday and average about you. Nothing.
Anybody want to go bowling? I'm very heavily involved in bowling, and I love it. That's what I do in my off time, and scuba diving. So if anybody wants to do those two things, I'm always open for it.
All right. It sounds good, man. All right. That's it for today. Thanks, man. See you.